This video presentation reviews the life of Imam Sajjad alayhi salam and gives an overview of the political instability during his lifetime. It also highlights the Imam's critical role in guiding the Muslims and reconstructing the Islamic society.
وَاجْعَلْنَا لِلْمُتَّقِينَ إِمَامًا
اللَّهُمَّ صَلِّ عَلَى مُحَمَّدٍ وَآلِ
Imam Ali ibn Hussein alayhi salam, also known as Sajjad, was born on the 5th of Sha'ban in year 38 Hijri in Medina. His mother was Shahrbanu, the daughter of Yazdegerd III, the last Persian king of the Sasanian Empire. She had converted to Islam and was later captured as a captive during the time of the third Khalifa, then brought to Medina where she married Imam Hussein alayhi salam. Imam Sajjad's mother passed away shortly after giving birth to him. It is unclear from the historical records whether Ali Akbar or Imam Sajjad was the eldest son of Imam Hussein. Imam Sajjad, who was born during the government of Imam Ali alayhi salam, was only 2 years old when his grandfather Imam Ali was struck with a poisonous sword. When Imam Ali was in his deathbed, he passed his sword and his holy Quran to Imam Hassan alayhi salam, as directed by the Prophet peace be upon him. Imam Ali then requested Imam Hassan to pass these items to Imam Hussein after himself. Imam Ali then asked Imam Hussein to continue passing these items to Imam Sajjad. Then, Imam Ali held the little hand of Imam Sajjad and told him to pass these items, as well as his and the Prophet's greetings to Imam Sajjad's future son, Muhammad.
Imam Sajjad grew up during the long caliphate of Muawiyah for about 20 years, 10 of which were during the imamate of his beloved uncle Imam Hassan, and 10 years during the imamate of his father Imam Hussein. Imam Sajjad witnessed the oppression of Muawiyah towards the Ahlul Bayt, the progeny of the Prophet. Imam Sajjad lived through a time where he heard the cursing of his grandfather Imam Ali from the pulpits all around the Islamic territory enforced by Muawiyah. Imam Sajjad also witnessed his uncle Imam Hassan struggling from the poison which took his life. Imam Sajjad supported his father with the uprising against Yazid. He migrated with his father from Medina to Mecca, and from Mecca to Karbala. Imam Sajjad was only 22 years old in Karbala. However, the Imam became sick a few days before Ashura. On the night before Ashura, while being very sick, he witnessed that his father Imam Hussein allowed his companions to freely leave and save their lives. But no one left.
و باز هم بمیرم و زنده شدم و همینطور هزار بار بمیرم و زنده شدم ترکتان نخواهم کرد.
On the day of Ashura, while Imam Sajjad was struggling with his illness and would become unconscious from time to time, Imam Hussein came to see him for the last time. He embraced his beloved son Imam Sajjad and said his final words to him. He also gave him a precious prayer to recite when in a sorrowful calamity. This prayer was passed down from the angel Jibrail to the Holy Prophet, and from him to Lady Fatima, and finally to Imam Hussein. When Imam Hussein was leaving for the battlefield, and Imam Sajjad saw his father's loneliness, he leaned on a stick and proceeded to help him. While he was struggling to even stand on his own feet, Imam Hussein asked his sister Kulthum to take care of Imam Sajjad and said that the earth should not be left without a representative from God. In the afternoon of Ashura, after Imam Hussein's martyrdom, when the tents were attacked, looted, and set on fire, Lady Zainab, Imam Hussein's sister, asked Imam Sajjad about what they should do, stay in the burning tents or escape the fire. Imam Sajjad's first ruling as an imam was to command them to escape to the desert and save their lives. However, Lady Zainab stayed with Imam Sajjad to protect him from the enemy and the fire. When the enemy saw Imam Sajjad and his severe condition, they left him to die with his illness. They carelessly looted his tent and even stole the rug that he was laying on. On the day after Ashura, Umar ibn Sa'd and his troops, who were responsible for the tragedy of Karbala, stayed there until noon to bury the bodies of their men. They then took the surviving family of Imam Hussein and his companions to Kufa, those captives whose number is estimated by some to be around 61 people. They tied their hands and made them ride camels without saddles. They tied the hands of Imam Sajjad to his neck to put more pressure on the imam, as he was the eldest male among the captives. Since the imam was very sick and could fall, they tied his legs from underneath the camel. When the captives passed by the bodies of Imam Hussein and other martyrs, they started to weep and cry with hearts full of pain and sorrow. Two days after Ashura, the captives arrived in Kufa. Ibn Ziyad, the governor of Kufa, ordered the captives and the mounted heads of the 72 martyrs and Imam Hussein on the spears to be taken throughout the city. He wanted to instill fear in the hearts of the people of Kufa. People came to the streets to watch the captives. Lady Zainab began to speak to the crowd, such that the people were reminded of her father, Imam Ali. She condemned the Kufis for breaking their allegiance to Imam Hussein and killing him. She told them that you have ruined your life in this world and the hereafter, and have become deserving of the wrath and punishment of God. Imam Sajjad then started speaking and introduced himself as the son of the one who had been martyred. He condemned their fraud. He asked them how they can face the Prophet now that they have destroyed their hereafter. People started crying and said, "We are ready to submit and follow your orders." The imam said that, "I will not trust you anymore. Do you want to do the same thing that you did to my forefathers? You just killed my father. My only request to you is to not support our enemy, nor claim to support us." Ibn Ziyad gathered people in his palace where Imam Hussein's head was brought in front of him. He was delighted, and with his stick, he kept hitting the teeth of Imam Hussein. Later, the captives were also brought in. Ibn Ziyad addressed Lady Zainab and praised his own victory. He asked her, "How did you find God's action against your family and brother?" Lady Zainab responds by saying, "I didn't see anything but beauty." She said that the family of the Prophet is blessed with the level of martyrdom. She also said, "Soon, you will face them in the court of the Almighty, and then you can see who overcomes." This conversation triggered Ibn Ziyad and made him very angry. He decided to kill Lady Zainab, but someone had advised him not to degrade himself by killing a woman, and he accepted. Ibn Ziyad then pointed at Imam Sajjad and asked, "Who is this young man?" They said, "Ali, son of Hussein." Ibn Ziyad said, "Didn't God kill Ali, the son of Hussein?" Imam Sajjad responded, "I had a brother whose name was also Ali, and your army killed him." Ibn Ziyad said, "No, God killed him." The Imam responded by reciting the following verse from the Quran.
الله يتوفى الأنفس حين موتها.
God takes the souls at the time of their death, implying that you killed my father and God took his soul upon his martyrdom. Ibn Ziyad angrily said, "How dare you talk back to me?" He ordered to behead Imam Sajjad. Lady Zainab desperately embraced Imam Sajjad and said, "I swear by God, I will not let him go. You must also kill me with him." Upon seeing this, Ibn Ziyad said to leave the Imam, since his illness is enough to kill him. He then ordered to imprison the captives. Three days after Ashura, upon becoming confident that Umar ibn Sa'd and his troops had left Karbala, the tribe of Bani Asad, who lived nearby, came to bury the martyrs. However, because the bodies were headless, they were unable to recognize them. Miraculously, Imam Sajjad came from the imprisonment of Kufa to Karbala and guided the Bani Asad tribe on where to bury the martyrs. Imam Sajjad himself took care of burying the body of his father, Imam Hussein. Ibn Ziyad sent a letter to Yazid to get his orders. Yazid ordered him to send the captives and the heads of the martyrs to Damascus. Ibn Ziyad only sent the captives from the Ahlul Bayt to him, whose number is estimated by some to be around 25. The captives were taken on camels, while their hands were tied with ropes. Again, Imam Sajjad's hands were severely tied to his neck. During the journey, Imam Sajjad did not speak to anyone but his family. He constantly prayed, glorified God, and recited the Quran. During the journey, the heads of the martyrs were transported in boxes, and upon arriving at any city, the heads would be mounted on the spears in front of the captives. If the family and the loved ones of the martyrs cried, the soldiers would beat them with their spears. The caravan was taken from city to city to show off Yazid's power, where the captives were presented to the people as rebels. When the caravan approached the city of Mosul, the governor ordered the city to be decorated to celebrate and welcome the caravan. However, when the people found out that the head of Imam Hussein was coming, they prepared an army of around 4,000 people to fight and capture the head of Imam Hussein to be respectfully buried. This news led the caravan to redirect its route and not to enter the city of Mosul to avoid conflict. After this incident, the caravan moved with a faster pace towards Damascus. The Syrian region was seized during the government of the second caliph. The second caliph had appointed Muawiyah as the governor of Syria, and he stayed in power for 42 long years until his son Yazid took over. Thus, the Syrians were only familiar with the Islam which was spread by Muawiyah's propaganda, to an extent that many Syrians did not know that the Prophet had left behind his family. As a result, the closer the caravan reached to Damascus in Syria, the people were more pro-government of Yazid and celebrated his victory. After about 12 days of traveling as captives and its hardships, the caravan finally arrived in Damascus. This is the place where later Imam Sajjad had recalled as the hardest part of their captivity since Ashura. To expose the captives, particularly the ladies, they were entered from the most crowded entrance of the city. They also placed the mounted heads on spears in the middle of the caravan to draw more attention to the women. Yazid prepared a gathering in his place and ordered the captives' presence. When he saw the heads approaching him from a distance, he said the following as poetry. Prophet killed my family in the Battle of Badr, and I took my revenge by killing his children. The heads of the martyrs were brought to Yazid while he was intoxicated as usual. He was amused and would use bad language to insult the head of Imam Hussein. The captives were later brought while they were all tied to one chain. When Lady Zainab saw the head of her brother Imam Hussein, she started crying and weeping. The people in the palace became emotional and started crying as well. However, Yazid was delighted by his victory and asked for a stick and kept on hitting the teeth of Imam Hussein. Yazid then addressed Imam Sajjad and said, "May God bless the one who killed your father." Imam Sajjad, without any fear, said, "May God curse him." To this, Yazid became really angry and wanted to kill Imam Sajjad. However, God's plans altered the situation. In the discussion of the Imam with Yazid, Yazid justified his actions by reciting the following verse from the Holy Quran.
وَمَا أَصَابَكُم مِّن مُّصِيبَةٍ فَبِمَا كَسَبَتْ أَيْدِيكُمْ وَيَعْفُو عَن كَثِيرٍ.
Whatever misfortune befalls you, it is because of what your hands have earned, and yet He pardons much. The Imam rejected his justification and responded by saying that our situation is instead described in the Quran as
مَا أَصَابَ مِن مُصِيبَةٍ فِي الْأَرْضِ وَلَا فِي أَنفُسِكُمْ إِلَّا فِي كِتَابٍ مِّن قَبْلِ أَن نَّبْرَأَهَا إِنَّ ذَلِكَ عَلَى اللَّهِ يَسِيرٌ.
No calamity occurs on earth or in your souls, but it is in a book, even before we can make it happen. That is easy for God. Later, Lady Zainab delivered a strong speech to Yazid and condemned him. Yazid imprisoned the captives in an old and wrecked house that would not protect them from the heat nor the cold. His intention was so that the house would fall and kill them. In the same prison, the beloved daughter of Imam Hussein, Ruqayya, passed away after enduring all the atrocities, and Imam Sajjad had to take care of the burial of his own sister at the same place. To show off his power to the people, Yazid took Imam Sajjad to the Mosque of Damascus and appointed a lecturer to deliver a sermon against Ahlul Bayt. The Imam rose and asked to enlighten the people with his words. Yazid resisted, but his near ones insisted him to allow Imam Sajjad to speak. The most important and critical sermon delivered by Imam Sajjad in Damascus was in this place. The Imam praised God and said, "We, as the Ahlul Bayt, have been bestowed with 6 blessings and 7 excellences from the Almighty. The blessings are knowledge, forbearance, chivalry, eloquence, courage, and the love of believers for us. The excellences are that Prophet Muhammad, Ali, Ja'far, Hamza, Hassan, and Hussein are from our family." The Imam then continued and said, "Allow me to introduce myself for those of you who don't know me." The Imam glorified his lineage from the Prophet, Khadija, Ali, Fatima, and Hussein, and described them with their best attributes. When the Imam was describing the cruelty of the tragedy of Karbala against his father Imam Hussein, people were influenced and began to cry. Yazid feared the effect of the Imam's words on the hearts of the people. Suddenly, he interrupted the Imam's speech by ordering the Adhan, the call to prayer, to be given. When the Adhan reached the verse of bearing witness to the Prophet, the Imam looked at Yazid and strongly said, "Is Muhammad your grandfather or mine? For if you say he is yours, then you're a liar. And if you believe that he is my grandfather, then why would you kill his family and captivate his descendants?" The Imam's words were so powerful that Yazid was subject to objections from the Syrians. Thus, Yazid had to change his policy towards the Imam to save his own government. He delivered a speech for the Syrians and said, "I did not kill nor order to kill Imam Hussein," and blamed his governor Ibn Ziyad for this horrific tragedy instead. During the Imam's short stay in Damascus, someone asked the Imam about his life. The Imam responded by comparing his life to that of the children of Israel when the Pharaoh killed their sons and enslaved their women. Yazid asked the Ahlul Bayt if they wanted to stay in Syria or return back to their homes in Medina. First, they asked him to allow them to gather and mourn for the loss of their loved ones. Thus, one of the first gatherings of mourning for Imam Hussein was set up in the heart of the Umayyad government. The captives wore black, gathered people, and mourned for 1 week. They then decided to return to Medina. Yazid gathered a caravan to respectfully return the Ahlul Bayt to Medina to portray to the people that he was innocent. On their way to Medina, they requested the caravan to stop by Karbala. Thus, at exactly 40 days after the martyrdom of Imam Hussein, the caravan came to Karbala. They met Jabir ibn Abdullah, one of the Prophet's close companions, who was the first to visit and pay respect to the grave of Imam Hussein. This day was called Arba'in, or 40th, which became an important day to honor in the Shia calendar. Many believe that Imam Sajjad returned the head of Imam Hussein to Karbala on this visit and buried it by his body. After a few days of mourning, the caravan continued its journey to Medina. When the caravan reached near Medina, Imam Sajjad sent a poet and requested him to recite a poem for Imam Hussein to inform the people of Medina about their arrival. The entire city of Medina was covered with grief. The people came out of the city to receive the caravan while grieving. The Imam delivered a sermon while he was crying. He praised God and mourned for Imam Hussein's martyrdom. The Imam reminded the people about the Prophet's command of loving and respecting his progeny, the Ahlul Bayt. The Imam said that, even if the Prophet had commanded a war against us, it could not be worse than the tragedy that we had endured. The caravan had returned to Medina after about 7 months, but without their loved ones. They visited the tomb of the Prophet where they sorrowfully cried and mourned. When in Medina, Imam Sajjad visited Salama, the Prophet's wife, and requested for the items that Imam Hussein had entrusted her prior to departing Medina. Imam Sajjad then received the swords of the Prophet and Imam Ali, as well as the other holy scriptures that were the special belongings of the Imam of the time. Furthermore, Imam Sajjad had received a scroll from his sister Fatima, that Imam Hussein had entrusted her on the day of Ashura to pass it to Imam Sajjad. For the rest of Yazid's government, Imam Sajjad and the Prophet's family, Banu Hashim, were in deep sorrow and grief. Their pain was to an extent that they only wore black clothes and never ate hot meals. The grief was so heavy on their hearts that Imam Hussein's sister, Lady Zainab, and his wife, Rubab, passed away shortly after the tragedy of Karbala. During this time, the Imam's activities and interactions were under intense surveillance by the government, as Yazid feared an uprising from the Imam to seek revenge for the tragedy of Karbala. Due to this pressure, the Imam only had three companions. Eventually, the Imam moved outside of Medina for a few years and lived in a temporary residence. He isolated himself and limited his interactions with the people. The Imam's isolation from the society protected him from Yazid's threats, as Yazid was looking for any excuse to eliminate the Imam. During this isolation, the Imam occasionally traveled in secret to visit the hidden grave of his grandfather, Imam Ali, in Najaf, and his father Imam Hussein in Karbala. The well-known Aminullah supplication was originally narrated from Imam Sajjad when he was visiting Imam Ali's grave. After Ashura, until the end of Imam Sajjad's life, which was around 34 years, the Imam consistently wept tears of sorrow for the tragedy of Karbala. The Imam is known as the top five divine characters who wept the most tears along with the prophets Adam, Jacob, Joseph, and Lady Fatima. The Imam was constantly reminded of Karbala. With every glance he had on water, he would have tears in his eyes. He used to fast during the day, and at night, upon seeing food, tears would be rolling down from his cheeks. Once the Imam saw a butcher slaughtering a sheep, he asked him if the animal was fed water before slaughtering. The Imam's eyes would then fill up with tears, and he would say that the grandson of the Prophet was slaughtered thirsty by the river. Once someone requested the Imam to come out of grief, the Imam responded by saying that Jacob had 12 sons. God only hid one, and he wept for 40 long years while he knew that his son was alive. Why shouldn't I cry when my beloved father, brother, and 17 of my family members were beheaded and cut into pieces? Imam Sajjad was also the first person to perform his prayers on the sand of Karbala to keep the message of Imam Hussein alive. This became a custom until today. At the beginning of Imam Sajjad's imamat, there was confusion among some people about the true Imam of the time. Some thought Muhammad ibn al-Hanafiyya was the Imam since he was older than Imam Sajjad. Also, in the past, imamat had been passed through brothers, from Imam Hassan to Imam Hussein. Muhammad ibn al-Hanafiyya was the son of Imam Ali and the younger brother of Imam Hussein, but was not from the progeny of the Prophet, from Lady Fatima. To convince the people and show the reality, both Imam Sajjad and Muhammad ibn al-Hanafiyya stood in front of the Kaaba and called the stone of Hajar al-Aswad to testify in their imamat. Hajar al-Aswad only responded to Imam Sajjad's call and testified his imamat. In less than a year from the tragedy of Karbala, Abdullah ibn Zubayr started to rise against Yazid in Mecca. Although he was against Yazid, he was looking for his own power by portraying an Islamic outlook. Ibn Zubayr was an opponent of Yazid's caliphate and had not paid allegiance to him. After Imam Hussein's martyrdom, Ibn Zubayr found a suitable opportunity to gather people around himself. He was the son of Zubayr, one of the Prophet's companions and the nephew of Aisha, the Prophet's wife. However, he was completely against Imam Ali and his family, and had a key role in forming the Battle of Jamal against Imam Ali. Imam Ali had said that Zubayr used to be with us Ahlul Bayt until his ill-fated son Abdullah turned him against us. Ibn Zubayr sent his agents in secret to encourage the people of Medina to pay allegiance to him. To negate this plot, the governor of Yazid in Medina tried to influence the elderly of Medina by sending a group of them to visit Yazid in Damascus. The group received many gifts and hospitality from Yazid. However, upon returning to Medina, they informed the people that they had witnessed Yazid, their so-called caliph or successor of the Prophet, openly indulge in sinful behavior, intoxication, and womanizing. This led to the reprisal of the people of Medina against Yazid and his family, the Umayyads. The people expelled the governor of Yazid and around 1,000 of the Umayyads, including Marwan ibn al-Hakam. Even though Marwan was an open enemy to Imam Ali and his family, he came to Imam Sajjad with a desperate request of entrusting his family, and the Imam accepted. When Yazid was informed about the uprising in Medina, he sent his troops under the leadership of Muslim ibn Uqbah to suppress them. This led to a battle in the outskirts of Medina known as the Battle of Al-Harra, where the people of Medina were defeated. The survivors withdrew and sought refuge in the mosque and the tomb of the Prophet. However, Yazid's troops entered the holy mosque with their horses and made a bloodbath within it. Muslim ibn Uqbah allowed his army for 3 days to loot, rape, and steal from the people of Medina, the city of the Prophet. Overall, up to around 10,000 people were murdered, including hundreds of the Prophet's companions and the Islamic and Quranic scholars. Imam Sajjad was isolated in this uprising and had moved his family and around 400 people who had sought refuge to him to the outskirts of Medina, and they were all safe. Muslim ibn Uqbah had orders from Yazid not to get into conflict with Imam Sajjad due to his isolation from this uprising. Yazid knew the Imam's isolation through his spies. Yazid also wanted to avoid the shame that the Umayyads had brought to themselves by the tragedy of Karbala. Thus, they did not interfere with Imam Sajjad. After the 3 days ended, Muslim ibn Uqbah ordered the people of Medina to come in his presence and renew their allegiance to Yazid and bear witness that they are Yazid's servants. Muslim ibn Uqbah killed anyone who opposed this order. However, he did not harm Imam Sajjad and excluded him from this order. When Imam Sajjad came to him, the Imam's greatness put a fear in Muslim ibn Uqbah's heart. He stood up from his position and respected the Imam and allowed him to return unharmed. After the massacre in Medina, Yazid's army continued towards Mecca to suppress Ibn Zubayr's uprising, despite the army leader, Muslim ibn Uqbah, dying on the way due to an illness. Yazid's army outnumbered Ibn Zubayr's army and surrounded Mecca for a few months. They attacked Ibn Zubayr's army, who had sought refuge in the vicinity of the Kaaba, by shooting fireballs which burned the Kaaba. This event proved that Yazid would go to any extent to eliminate his opponents, and also signified the importance of Imam Hussein's decision to leave Mecca towards Karbala to keep the honor of the Kaaba and avoid bloodshed within it. During this period, the news of the death of Yazid was received by his army, and they finally returned to Syria. Yazid, in his short reign of only 3 years and 8 months, committed 3 outrageous crimes: the tragedy of Karbala, the massacre of Medina, and the burning of the Holy Kaaba. The death of Yazid was a shock for the Umayyads, who were in power for years. They tried to maintain their power by convincing the Syrians to pay allegiance to Muawiyah II, the oldest son of Yazid, as a new caliph who was only 22 years old. When he appeared to deliver a speech for the people, he condemned the actions of his grandfather, Muawiyah ibn Abu Sufyan, and his father Yazid against the Ahlul Bayt. He withdrew himself from the caliphate since he did not want to bear the sin of an unlawful government. The Umayyads were shocked by his speech and blamed his teacher for his differing opinion. Even though Muawiyah's teacher rejected their claim, they still buried him alive. Muawiyah II also died shortly in less than 3 months. Yazid's death and the lack of unity in Syria provided Ibn Zubayr with an opportunity to expand his government and to declare himself as the caliph. He appointed some of the elderly to get allegiance from the people on his behalf from all around the Islamic territory. This led to a division among the Umayyads in Syria, where some were supportive of Ibn Zubayr's caliphate and some, under the leadership of Marwan ibn al-Hakam, were against him. Finally, in a big battle known as Majrahat that took place between the two sides, Marwan ibn al-Hakam defeated the other Umayyads and took control of Syria. Medina fell under the control of Ali Zubayr, and during his government, the pressure and cruelty on Imam Sajjad and the Prophet's family increased. Although Ali Zubayr and the Umayyads were against each other for the caliphate, both had hatred against the Ahlul Bayt and their Shia followers. At the same time, when the Umayyads were following Muawiyah's legacy of cursing Imam Ali from the pulpit, Ibn Zubayr said that he had hidden his hatred against the Prophet's family in his heart for 40 years. He had even removed the salutations to the Prophet from his Friday sermons for 40 consecutive weeks. Since he didn't want Banu Hashim to feel the pride of belonging to the Prophet's family, he imprisoned 26 of the Banu Hashim and threatened to burn them in fire if they did not pay allegiance to him. At this situation, the Imam did not approve Ibn Zubayr's government and was also very concerned about his plots against the Shias. The Imam continued his strategy to appear isolated from politics and didn't get involved in any activity that would benefit Ali Zubayr or the Umayyads. The division in power provided a great potential for the Shia followers in Kufa to seek the revenge of Imam Hussein's blood from his killers. The Shia would be outraged to see the killers of Imam Hussein living freely in Kufa. They were in deep sorrow after the tragedy of Karbala and felt guilty for inviting Imam Hussein to Kufa and not supporting him. However, the Shia followers were split into two groups. One group, under the leadership of Mukhtar al-Thaqafi, a great warrior and politician, who initially wanted to establish a government in Kufa and then proceed to fight against the Umayyads' army under the leadership of Ibn Ziyad. The other group, called the Tawabin, or the Repenters, were determined to seek revenge by waging a war against the Umayyads' army. They were under the leadership of Sulayman ibn Surad al-Khuza'i, a great Shia scholar who was a companion of the Prophet and the Imams. The Tawabin could not gather more than 4,000 troops, as many were leaning towards Mukhtar. The Tawabin proceeded to the Battle of Ain al-Warda and were defeated by Ibn Ziyad's large army of around 30,000, where they were extremely outnumbered. There is no historical evidence of any relationship between the Tawabin and Imam Sajjad. The Tawabin were ashamed to contact Imam Sajjad and invite him for an uprisal, as they had invited his father Imam Hussein to Kufa, but failed to support him. Also, The Imam's strategy was to not get involved openly in any political activities. The Imam was living with a few supporters in Medina and was far from his Shia followers in Kufa. The Imam had said that we, as the Ahlul Bayt, do not have more than 20 people who love us in the entire cities of Mecca and Medina. Thus, any political activity by the Imam would endanger his life in Medina. Marwan ibn al-Hakam died with a very short reign in government of less than a year. He kept the Umayyads' governorship in his lineage, who were called the Banu Marwan. After his death, his son Abdul Malik assumed power. He proved to be a very cruel caliph and had appointed oppressive and tyrant governors to pressure people to stabilize his own government. With the defeat of the Tawabin, Mukhtar found the time suitable to initiate his uprising. He introduced himself as the representative of Muhammad ibn al-Hanafiyya and was able to gather around 17,000 allegiances. The survivors of the Tawabin also joined his uprising. Mukhtar defeated Ibn Zubayr's governor in Kufa in a civil war and took control of the city. After about 5 years from the tragedy of Karbala, Mukhtar took revenge from the responsible Kufis in that tragedy. He also sent his troops to fight against Abdul Malik's army under the leadership of Ibn Ziyad. In the Battle of Al-Khazir, Mukhtar's troops defeated and killed Ibn Ziyad on the day of Ashura, exactly 6 years after the tragedy of Karbala.
سر از بدنش جدا و پیکر خبیثش به آتش سوزانده خواهد شد.
Mukhtar had a short government of about 1.5 years and was eventually suppressed by Mus'ab, the brother of Abdullah ibn Zubayr, and his governor in Basra, Iraq. Upon his victory, Mus'ab ordered the beheadings of around 7,000 of Mukhtar's troops who had surrendered and left Mukhtar without support. This incident showed the cruelty of Ibn Zubayr's caliphate against Shias. This event also highlighted that the Shias of Kufa were not fully dedicated to their faith and were still untrustworthy. Due to the political circumstances, the Imam did not directly endorse Mukhtar's movement, However, there are historical records that show his consent for the revenge of the blood of Imam Hussein. When a group of Shia followers from Kufa came to Imam Sajjad in Medina to inquire the legitimacy of Mukhtar's uprisal, the Imam said that even if a slave stands for us, the Ahlul Bayt, the people must support him. The Imam then appointed his uncle Muhammad ibn al-Hanafiyya to guide them on political matters. Also, when Mukhtar sent the head of Ibn Ziyad to Imam Sajjad, he fell into prostration and prayed for him. He then donated it a great charity to thank God for this event. Imam Sajjad, after 6 long years, requested the ladies of Banu Hashim, who were still mourning for Karbala, to change their black dresses and come out of grief. While the Islamic territory was split between Abdul Malik and Ibn Zubayr, Abdul Malik feared the influence of Ali Zubayr's propaganda on his people as they were going to Mecca to perform Hajj. Thus, with the help of the bribed scholars, they fabricated fake narrations from the Prophet to encourage the people to perform Hajj at Masjid al-Aqsa in Palestine, which was under his territory, instead of Mecca. For this purpose, he also built the famous Dome of Rock building in Masjid al-Aqsa. Under these circumstances, where any governor could change the Islamic rituals in his favor, Imam Sajjad was a representative of the true Islamic values taught by the Prophet. The Imam tried to guide the bribed scholars and warn them about their actions. The Imam's powerful letter to Al-Zuhri, one of those bribed scholars, is narrated in history. Despite the ban in force on narrations from the Holy Prophet since his demise, the Imam tried to inform the Muslims about the actual teachings of the Prophet by his advice and character. The Imam explained the true way of performing Hajj in his Manasik and Hajj book to guide the Muslims who didn't even know how to perform Hajj correctly. The Imam performed Hajj more than 20 times during his lifetime. When the Imam wore the white garments of pilgrimage and proceeded to say Labbaik to his Lord, he passed out. When he would regain consciousness, the people would ask him the reason. The Imam would respond by saying, "That I feared denial from my Lord." As a result, people would think that if the Imam of the time, the great grandson of the Prophet, fears the acceptance of his Hajj, then what would become of our Hajj? After a few years of suppressing various rebellious uprisals around Syria, Abdul Malik moved his army towards Kufa. In the Battle of Deir al-Jata'liq, he defeated Mus'ab and took control of Iraq. When the proud Abdul Malik came to Kufa, he was presented with the head of Mus'ab in the town hall. A member of the audience said that, "I was here in the town hall when the head of Hussein was brought to Ibn Ziyad, the head of Ibn Ziyad for Mukhtar, the head of Mukhtar for Mus'ab, and now I see the head of Mus'ab in front of you." Abdul Malik, who feared that this historical pattern would repeat in his case and his head would be offered next, ordered the roof above them to be destroyed. After seizing Kufa, Abdul Malik sent his troops under the leadership of Hajjaj ibn Yusuf to conquer and suppress Ibn Zubayr in Mecca. Hajjaj surrounded Mecca for several months. Ibn Zubayr and his troops sought refuge in the vicinity of the Holy Kaaba. However, Hajjaj ordered his troops to fire rocks towards them. As a result, the Kaaba was entirely damaged. Abdullah ibn Zubayr was finally killed and his caliphate terminated after about 9 years. After a long unrest in Hejaz and Iraq, Abdul Malik was able to bring them all under a single government. After the Holy Kaaba was entirely damaged, the Imam had a critical role in guiding the Muslims with rebuilding the Kaaba. Yazid's public indulgence and sinful behavior made it a custom for the upcoming caliphs, including Banu Marwan, to also openly indulge in those behaviors, which in turn legitimized them for the public. Furthermore, years of civil unrest, battles, cruel governors, and elimination of the Islamic scholars had taken away any motivation for religious practices. Religion was no longer a priority for the people. It became publicly common, even in the holy cities of Mecca and Medina, to have open concerts by female singers, where many came to womanize. According to historical records, in one incident, there was a famous female singer in Medina who decided to perform Hajj, and her fans also accompanied her in large numbers. Upon entering Mecca and returning to Medina, the people came in crowds to welcome her, and she sang in public to please them. In such a society, people were not interested in any religious guidance, and would also ridicule any advice or teaching provided to them. The Imam had described his situation by saying that, "If we give them the teachings of the Prophet, they would ridicule us. However, we can't remain silent either." The Imam used every opportunity to guide the people. He also had weekly lectures for the people on Fridays in the Mosque of the Prophet. The Imam's advice were focused on the short duration of this life and the significance of the hereafter. The Imam's words would impact the people who would listen to him and would touch their hearts. As a token of appreciation, Abdul Malik assigned Hajjaj as the governor of Medina. Hajjaj was a bloodthirsty man who would kill people for any excuse, and had created a brutal and suppressive regime. He wanted an approval from Abdul Malik to kill Imam Sajjad. In a letter to Abdul Malik, he said that, "If you want the stability and endurance of your government, kill Ali ibn Hussein." However, Abdul Malik responded by warning against spilling the blood of Banu Hashim, and said that, "I have witnessed that when Yazid killed Hussein, the government was removed from his lineage." The Imam had knowledge of this communication and wrote a letter to Abdul Malik to inform him of the content and the timing of his communication to Hajjaj. The Imam said that he had received this knowledge through the Prophet. The Imam wanted to let Abdul Malik know that he had full knowledge of his government and reminded him about his close ties and revelations through the Prophet. Ultimately, the Imam wanted to prohibit Abdul Malik from harassing him. Once Abdul Malik confirmed that the Imam's statements regarding the timing of his communication was valid, he responded by sending gifts as recognition. During this time, the Imam continued his isolation policy from politics. Once, Abdul Malik met the Imam around the Holy Kaaba and complained to him about his distance from the Banu Marwan government. However, the Imam rejected his request. Although Abdul Malik had control over the entire Islamic territory, there were various rebellions during his government, especially in Iraq. Thus, he assigned Hajjaj as the governor of Iraq. Once Hajjaj arrived in Kufa, He entered the mosque, revealed the cover on his face, and threatened the people by saying that their heads were like ripe fruits ready to be cut. Hajjaj brutally suppressed the people of Iraq, especially if he doubted their Shia beliefs. He fought for years with the Khawarij. He also battled the uprisal from his own army commander, Ibn Ash'ath, which was the biggest threat to the Umayyads before their extinction. Overall, Hajjaj killed around 120,000 people outside of wars, and imprisoned tens of thousands of Iraqis during the 20 years of his government in Iraq, until his death. The Imam didn't support any side of these fights, since both sides were hostile against the Ahlul Bayt. In this situation, the Imam was planning for an ideal Islamic government for the long term. His goal was to influence the people with his prayers and moral actions to finally attract them towards the true Islamic teachings. The Imam also trained real Muslims in a society where everyone called themselves Muslims yet did not abide by the prophetic values. The Imam illustrated the frameworks of an ideal Islamic government with his book, The Risalat al-Huquq. Imam Sajjad was a symbol of prayer and piety in the society. He used to fast and pray 1,000 units of prayer on a daily basis. His face used to become pale in worship while in the presence of God. His prayers would often remind people of the prayers of Imam Ali. Imam Sajjad had multiple elevated titles which reflected his worship. He was known as As-Sajjad, which means someone who prostrates a lot. He was also known as Sayyid As-Sajjadin, which means the master of the prostrators. He received these titles because he was constantly in prostration and prayers to God for every blessing he received. He was also known as Dhu Thafanat, someone who has grown calluses or hard, thickened skin on all places touching the ground while prostrating. The Imam used to treat his hardened skin twice a year. He was also known as Zain al-Abidin, which means the adornment of the worshippers. The Imam tried to attract the people to the true Islamic teachings. He wanted to open their relationships with God through the language of prayers. This was not suspicious for the governors, nor did it repel the people. Many supplications have been narrated from the Imam, such as the famous supplication of Abu Hamza al-Thumali, which the Imam used to recite on the dawns of the months of Ramadan. A collection of 54 of the Imam's supplications is compiled in a book called As-Sahifat al-Sajjadiyya. This book is the greatest Shia book after the Quran and Nahjul Balagha, and it is also called Sister of the Quran, Gospel of the Holy Household, and Psalms of Muhammad's Progeny, which clearly indicates the importance of the book. In this book of supplications, the Imam expresses Islamic knowledge regarding various aspects of individual, social, political, and cultural life. The famous Makarim al-Akhlaq is just one of the supplications in As-Sahifat al-Sajjadiyya. Imam Sajjad also worked hard to raise Muslims with the true Islamic values. The Imam, who had started with only 3 companions, expanded to tens of companions during his lifetime. The names of more than 170 loyal companions are recorded in history. The Imam set up classes in the Mosque of the Prophet and his own home to teach Islamic lessons. He would purchase enslaved men while he didn't need them and would train them to become model Muslims. The Imam would even take them to Hajj with himself, provide them with financial resources, and finally free them to the society. He would never keep any of them for more than a year, and every year, at the end of the month of Ramadan, he would free about 20 slaves. The freed men by the Imam were estimated to be in the thousands. The Imam's action was also a practical message against the discrimination of slaves in that society. Imam Sajjad also portrayed how an ideal Muslim should act and live in his book, The Risalat al-Huquq. In this book, The Imam stated 50 rights that every person should recognize and respect. These rights cover all of the rights involved in the relationships between an individual with God, an individual with himself, and an individual with others. These rights include the rights of God and our deeds to Him, rights of different organs of the body, rights of the social relationships such as family, various members of the society, and the government. Some of these rights are compulsory by Islamic rulings, but the majority of them are recommended and are only identified in a true Muslim. As time passed with the increase in Abdul Malik's power, his cruelty and oppression to Imam Sajjad increased. He had spies to monitor the Imam's relations and all details of his personal and social life. In one incident, he sent a letter to the Imam and asked for the sword of the Prophet while threatening him. The Imam rejected his demand and ended his statement with the following verse from the Holy Quran.
إِنَّ اللَّهَ لَا يُحِبُّ كُلَّ مُخْتَالٍ فَخُورٍ.
Verily, God does not love the proud and boastful. The Imam then asks Abdul Malik to judge which one of them is more representative of this verse. In another incident, Abdul Malik summoned Imam Sajjad and ordered to bring him to Damascus in chains. In the midst of the way, the Imam miraculously freed himself and voluntarily presented himself in Abdul Malik's palace. The Imam firmly asked Abdul Malik, "What business do you and I have together?" The Imam left the palace while Abdul Malik was in great shock and fear. One year, Abdul Malik sent his son Hisham to perform Hajj in Mecca. When Hisham was around the Kaaba, he decided to go and touch Hajar al-Aswad, the heavenly rock. However, he was unable to reach it due to the crowd. Shortly after, while washing the Kaaba, he noticed Imam Sajjad coming through the crowd. The crowd moved away with respect in making room for the Imam to reach Hajar al-Aswad. Hisham felt offended by the great respect people had shown to the Imam. He pretended not to know the Imam. A poet by the name Farazdaq, who had close ties to Banu Marwan's government, witnessed this incident and told Hisham that, "I know that man and can describe him for you." He then recited a long and beautiful poem describing and praising the Imam. Hisham became angry and ordered to cut Farazdaq's allowance from Baytul Mal and imprison him. After his custody was lengthened, Farazdaq requested the Imam to pray for his release. He then was released and came to the Imam and told him that his allowance was stopped by the government. The Imam provided him with allowance even though he was hesitant to accept it. The Imam gave him the amount of allowance for a specific number of years and told him that if I knew that you would need more, I would definitely provide you with more. Exactly upon the completion of these years, Farazdaq passes away. Abdul Malik died after 21 years of being in power and his son Walid replaced him. Walid was a very cruel and stubborn character who lacked the literacy of the Arabic language and would make obvious mistakes in his speech. In his first sermon as a caliph, he told the people that whoever stands against him would be beheaded, while whoever keeps silent and obeys his orders would die by a natural death. He also kept Hajjaj in his position as the governor of Iraq. The majority of his reign was spent in military campaigns and the expansion of his territory in northern Africa, India, Central Asia, and Andalusia in Europe. Walid replaced the cruel governor of Medina, Hisham ibn Ismail. Hisham oppressed and harassed the people of Medina, particularly Imam Sajjad. Hisham was persecuted for his atrocities and tied in public where people could come and take revenge. Hisham stated that he feared Imam Sajjad more than anyone else as he had been the most oppressive towards him. When the Imam and his companions passed by Hisham, the Imam ordered his companions not to insult him. The Imam greeted Hisham and treated him respectfully. By this treatment, Hisham was deeply ashamed. When the Imam left him, Hisham recited the following excerpt from the Holy Quran. God knows best where to place his prophethood. This incident was just one of many examples where the Imam had influenced the hearts of people by his actions. Imam Sajjad's valiant efforts to guide the Muslims and reconstruct the Islamic society had put him at the center of attention and respect from the Muslims. For example, the famous reciters of Quran in Medina would not leave for Hajj until Imam Sajjad left the city and they would follow him in large numbers. Also, the people would not return until the Imam left Mecca. The Umayyads, who had fear for their own power, could not tolerate the Imam's influence among the people. Thus, Hisham ibn Abdul Malik, who hated the Imam due to his observations at Hajj, encouraged his brother Walid to order the poisoning of the Imam. When Imam Sajjad was poisoned, he called his children and chose his son Muhammad as his successor, and called him with the title of Al-Baqir. Imam Sajjad gave him a heavy chest full of holy books and scriptures, as well as the swords of the Prophet and Imam Ali, which was passed down through the Imams. Imam Sajjad spoke to his son, Imam Baqir, in private for some time. Among his last words, he emphasized to him the importance of kindness to the people. He also told Imam Baqir what his father, Imam Hussein, had passed down to him on the day of Ashura, which was to avoid oppressing someone who has nobody but God to defend him. Then, the Imam became unconscious, and when he regained consciousness, he recited the chapters of Waqi'ah and Fath from the Holy Quran. The chapter Waqi'ah describes the Day of Judgment and the categorization of people on that day. Also, the chapter Fath describes the Treaty of Hudaybiyah, where the Muslims achieved victory peacefully. The Imam then recited the following verse.
وقالوا الحمد لله الذي صدقنا وعده وأورثنا الأرض نتبوأ من الجنة حيث نشاء فنعم أجر العاملين.
Praise be to God, who has fulfilled his promise to us, and made us inherit the land, enjoying paradise as we please. How excellent is the reward of the workers. And then his soul ascended, and he passed away on the 25th of Muharram in the year 95 Hijri, at the age of 56. At the time of preparing the body of the Imam for burial, calluses were found on his back from carrying sacks of food. The Imam used to distribute food secretly at night amongst around 100 needy families of Medina. After the Imam's martyrdom, people discovered that their livelihoods had been coming from him. This was in addition to the two occasions where the Imam had split his entire wealth with the needy in the way of God. The Imam's martyrdom brought grief to the entire city of Medina, and the people came in crowds to his funeral. The Imam was buried in the Baqi Cemetery within the vicinity of his uncle Imam Hassan alayhi salam. Imam Sajjad is one of the Imams with the longest duration of Imamat who lived in a very critical and complex political situation. When one studies the life of Imam Sajjad, one can divide his Imamat into two different periods. The first period begins at Karbala on the day of Ashura and continues to Kufa and Damascus and ends by the Imam's return to Medina. The second period begins upon his return to Medina and lasts until his martyrdom for about 34 years. During the first period, the tragedy of Karbala was the biggest sorrow to the Ahlul Bayt. Although Imam Sajjad was very sick and a captive, he didn't fear for his life and knew that his silence would fade the message of Karbala. Thus, he spoke up against Ibn Ziyad and Yazid, condemned their actions, and confronted their justifications. The Imam also tried to awaken the people by delivering subjective lectures. The Imam's lectures for the people in Kufa was focused on condemning their actions in the tragedy of Karbala. His focus in Damascus was to familiarize them with the Ahlul Bayt, and in Medina reminded them of the heartbreaking loss to the Ahlul Bayt. The Imam's lectures pressured Yazid to deny his role from the tragedy of Karbala and to free the Ahlul Bayt. The Imam's words also caused the people to doubt the government, which contributed to the consequent upcoming political unrests in the Islamic territory. The second period of the life of Imam Sajjad in Medina was during a long period of wars and uprisals. As if God had punished the people responsible for the tragedy of Karbala. This punishment was not limited to just the killers of Imam Hussein, but everyone whose reluctance or approval led to the tragedy of Karbala from all around the Islamic territory. However, the most suffering was paid by the Iraqis who left Imam Hussein without support and killed him in Karbala. During this period, Iraqis went through various wars, uprisals, and brutal governors. In this period, the Imam isolated himself from politics and put all of his efforts to save the lives of his followers in the endless wars of power. Any political activity in this time would endanger the Imam's life since the fugitive rulers were looking for any excuse to remove the Imam and stabilize their own government. The Imam was one of the closest blood relatives to the Prophet alive. He was the only light of guidance in a society that was lacking interest in the Islamic teachings due to long wars, political unrest, and cruel governors. The Imam knew that it was not possible to establish an ideal Islamic government in the near future, so he decided to plan for such a society in the long term by various efforts. The Imam attracted Muslims to the true Islamic teachings by his prayers, behaviors, and supplements, such as Sahifat al-Sajjadiyya. The Imam's supplements would not make the government suspicious nor repel the people. The Imam taught true Islamic values to his companions and the freed slaves to become true representatives of such an ideal society. He also portrayed the framework of such an ideal society with his book, The Risalat al-Huquq. By the Imam's martyrdom, the first Islamic century was almost over. The true Islamic teachings and values that were established by the Prophet had faded away, gradually, after his demise, to the extent that nothing could stop the so-called Muslims from reaching their political interests, even if they had to brutally kill his dear grandson in Karbala, or to even destroy the Kaaba, the holiest site in Islam. Imam Sajjad reconstructed the Islamic foundation from the start similar to what the Prophet had done at the beginning. Imam Sajjad's hard work led the people to know the Ahlul Bayt as the true representatives of Islam and prepared an environment for Imam Baqir to establish a seminary in Medina to provide deep Islamic knowledge for the people who were eager for it.